I did that just like I was the count, but none of you guys on the other line are going to know anything that I'm talking about right now.
That's funny.
So just to fill you in, we count down every time we do this, and I counted like I was the count. What is that count called? Just the count?
I think so.
From Sesame Street? A one, yeah. A two, three. So
I love that guy.
Me too. I loved his song. And you know, he would go, Betty, Betty, Betty.
Yes.
Know that song?
Yeah.
That's so good.
He seems like he's like a combination of Ernie and Oscar as like one person.
Oh.
I don't know why.
Yes. Yes. Like, that makes sense. Like yeah. The, with, like, okay, ready for
Tuesday
this one?
Sacrifice
a little bit of sex
of
appeal?
Yeah, it's so true. He's edgy. Yeah. He's got an edge.
You know what? Yes. I would like the vampire.
Yes, right. There's a little darkness, but he loves education still.
Oh, gosh. That's how are you, Sue? Speaking of counting, what the heck episode is this?
God, it's episode 583.
583,
Sarah. 583? Yeah.
Holy crap.
That's a lot
coming up on
talking.
600?
Oh, my God. What are we going to do?
We celebrated 500 last time I was in Costa Rica.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yes. So, boy, you're there a lot.
Yeah, well,
like accidentally.
Crises happen a lot.
Crises.
I'd like them to stop. Oh, Susie.
What?
Susie.
What?
I had the nightmare of all experience. Oh my God, I could barely talk about it, but I will because you guys have to hear this story.
Okay.
Okay. This is so first of all, let's just recap. What are the two things I hate more than anything? Mysterious wetness and things that scurry.
And things that scurry,
yes.
Yeah.
I didn't even have to say that. You could have gotten that on your own. Okay,
yeah.
So, as you guys know, I'm staying at my mom's house in Costa Rica. Costa Rica.
By the way, how about that monkey?
Oh, yeah, that guy. Who's like adorable, like
crazy.
The first day you're here, but then when you're here for a month, you're like, shut up. And it sounds like moaning and whining during my whole session.
Yeah.
Luckily, they can't hear, but I can. And I'm like so ADD. Those kind of things distract me like crazy.
Right. Okay.
So I am here in Costa Rica. And everything's a little moist and wet in Costa Rica because it's just like you're in the – just that's how it is. It's tropical. And with the tropics come certain bugs and things like
right.
that. So mm-hmm. – I am, it's probably like 7 o'clock at night, sun's gone down, it's dark. My mom and I are watching some movie, something creepy too. Oh, The Clove Hitch Killer or something like that.
Okay, yeah. I don't know that one.
It's with, oh God.
Sounds like a B movie.
I don't know. It's good though. It's about like a son who discovers his dad, spoiler alert, is a serial killer and it's really good.
Okay.
So I was like already in a spooky mood. So I'm like making dinner and I have at the same time, I'm making soup. I've got all of my ingredients like cut up and out on the counter and, I'm like doing my little kitchen thing. And I go to, my mom's telling me something like giving me some directions for like, okay, can you get me this? Can you get me this? And I'm like got the water boiling and I've got 1,000 things on at once and I got the spooky movie in the background. And so I'm already like high strung. And so I go to fill up, to add more water to the pot. Oh God, I could barely say the words. I go to add, I'm so nervous about what's about to happen in my own mind. I go to add more water to the pot. And she's got one of those handles, one of those faucets where you can pull out the, where the water comes out, and mm-hmm. you can turn it into one of those spray things, and it kind of has like a hose attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to pull the thing out, Susie, like something out of Stephen motherfucking King, cockroaches came crawling out.
Why did
of
you
there.
Say plural?
Not one, not two, not three, but like four. Like,
oh my God,
Susie.
That is terrifying.
I have the natural human reaction that one would have. This It's everything you could imagine it looks like. Ugh. You know, they're like coming out and the legs come out first, and they're coming out from either side, and then they crawl down it.
Then, why were there so many in there?
I don't know. Then my mom's like, and my mom is like calm about it. I'm like, this is, and then looking at me like I'm overreacting. Right. I'm like, no, right. I want you to know that that is the normal human reaction for what just happened. Like, I had to make it very clear, because then that's not even the end of it. Then I step back and what do I step in? Mysterious wetness. But the mystery was solved real quick when I look up and Bo has this look on her face like, oh, I'm sorry.
No, no.
Yes, Susie, yes.
You scared the piss out of her?
It scared the piss out of her.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
So I step in that and then my mom's like, hang on, I'll try to help. Takes her, she's in the wheelchair, rolls her wheelchair through the pee that then takes it through the whole house. No. Meanwhile, there are multiple cockroaches crawling on the counter with the food that I have. This has been like a two-day soup, you know, like one of those. Like, yeah. I've made the broth the day one. Now I've like strained it. And like that's when, I discovered it when I was pulling out. Oh, God, I'm freaking out again.
What did you do about the cockroaches?
My mom was like, well, you got to get them. And I was like, I had to take a moment. No. I was like, Ma, I started crying. I was like, help. I was just like, this is.
Sarah's glitching.
I really did. I was like, I don't know what I'm crying about, Mom. I'm crying about the overwhelming understanding, like reality that I am alone. And doing this by myself. There is nobody else who will save us from these cockroaches except me in this moment. And you got to fucking nut up and do it. And I did not want to do any of that.
Did you squish them?
Susie! yes!
That's the worst because they crunch.
That's what I said. I was like, Mom. My mom was like, what's the big deal? Just squish them. I'm like, that is the big deal. You have just said the big deal. Squishing them. The actual. I said, I cannot kill anything that makes a noise. When I murder it. So I'm a hero and a murderer.
Oh my God.
So really intense, terrible. Susie. I could cry right now. I was like, I'm done. This is it. This is what did me in. If anybody was wondering what Sarah's last straw was, it was this moment right here.
She died doing what she hated.
I had to just take a walk. After I killed the I had to take a walk because I had to take out the trash.
Right, because there were guts in there.
And I, you know what I did it with? And then I was using, because what else am I going to, I don't know what to do. I was using a pot. So I smashed it with like the bottom of a pot. God. So that made a really loud noise. And of course I missed like twice. Then my mom's yelling at me, don't break the wall. And I'm like, that is the least of my concerns right now. I'm trying to stay alive. My mom's like, it's more scared of you. I'm like, I don't care.
I wish there was footage of this.
Oh, I for real, I had a moment where I just like sat on the couch and I was like, I just need a moment to cry. I just need to feel my feelings right now. And then I'll be able to handle the stuff. But I just need to have a moment to just process.
Yeah,
just
release
take a deep
the emotions.
Breath.
Yeah.
Okay. But wow. It's only been like 24, maybe 48 hours since then.
Yeah.
I keep thinking like to myself, remember that worst moment of your whole life?
2 minutes ago?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Like, it's now. And then my mom is behind me saying, you ate bugs on the challenge. What are you so scared of? I'm like,
That's different.
When they're served up on a platter, sure. But this falls into things that scurry category.
Yeah. Weren't they already deceased at that time, too?
Yes, Susie.
I'll tell you what's a lot more delicious than cockroaches.
Please.
And that's HelloFresh.
Yes, I needed that. Then I probably would have been in this situation to begin with somehow.
Right? So HelloFresh could have saved
would
Sarah
would have to make my
two-day
soup.
Right. Because HelloFresh delivers pre-portioned ingredients to your door and farm fresh produce that arrives within a week. So you get convenience without skimping on quality. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yes. You don't have to worry about all that stuff Sarah's dealing with. You can get a variety of different things, too. Like, they have all different kinds. They have veggie, they have calorie smart, they have family friendly, and then there's, like, gourmet options, which I highly recommend. Or, and then you can add, like, a little Dunkaroo cookie dough or vanilla yes. delight cheesecake. Mm. Okay, what are you waiting for? Go to HelloFresh.com/BrainCandy16 and use code BrainCandy16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. That's HelloFresh.com/BrainCandy16. Code BrainCandy16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Whew. Wow. I am emotionally drained.
I am emotionally drained. Like,
I'm sorry that happened to you.
In my, you know, it's like Costa Rica is a paradise. It is beautiful. And she lives in a really nice place where, like, I looked it up. It's like yeah. $300 a night to freaking, like, you know, not stay in her place, but like the other, like, penthouse here. Like,
yeah.
It's like fancy schmancy. And,
well, this is what I always say. Every place on Earth has its own problems. Yeah. So you just have to pick which problems you want.
Right. I don't want cockroaches problems. I don't want... There's too much mysterious wetness and too many things that scurry here.
Poor Bo. She was having a tough time, too.
She is. And you know what? I think she's fully blind. Like, she might be...
No.
She might be getting there. Because she's really? Had a few, she had a few situations on this trip where she
you were like, "Yo, that's a wall."
Yeah, and or yeah. she'll get lost and she'll like look for me. You can tell she just wanders around the house at night, like, "Oh, where is she?"
What? Why did they go blind though? Is it cataracts like humans?
I don't know. I have no
clue. What causes that?
She has an appointment at the vet tomorrow, so. She's going to the
vet. In Costa Rica?
Yeah. Apparently they've got a great Costa Rican vet down here that is real good. So, and cheaper than American vets. I'm sorry, vets out there, but you guys are pricey.
They really are. Everyone talks about it.
And I like, if we're going to do like the check everything, like I'm going to do the check everything, you know, package where it's 50% yeah. off. Because I'm
what
just doing exploratory
mean,
work, you know, like, well, because like the cost of x-rays in the United States, mm-hmm. like to go get x-rays for my dog is like mm-hmm. fucking expensive. Here, they're like, yeah, $20. There you go.
Oh, okay. So you can get everything done there. That's great.
Yeah. They're going to, you know, do blood panel, do x-rays, check her little biopsy, her little bumps on her everywhere. And, give her a little something so she doesn't go tinkle all the time.
Poor baby.
I know, my little old lady. But, you know, what are you going to do? This is actually kind of an interesting... I didn't mean for it to be a segue, but it kind of is one. Because...
Okay.
So, while I was here, I was trying to help my mom... No, since I've been here. I'm trying to help my mom distract her mind. And because she's, like, used to, you know, moving around and, like, using her feet and being, like me.
On the move.
On the move.
So, a woman about town.
So I introduced her to, like, online, our friend Jane McGonigal. Shout out to Jane. Who wrote Super Better and did a TED Talk on the really great TED Talk on how to, I think it's called, like, how to extend your life or how to, like, live longer, something like that, along those lines. I should really look it up and find out what it is. It is the game that can give you an extra 10 years of life. That's right. So So she had an accident where she had a traumatic brain injury where the doctor said you have to basically be on bed rest and like not think and not do anything and not use your brain and like be really like rested for a long time while she was recovering. So she has a PhD, I believe, in like gaming and like the psychology of gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was like, okay, well, I'm going to use this and turn this into a game. And she did a lot of her own kind of like research in her situation where she kind of like came up with a game of how to get her through the tough times. And the game focused on 4 types of strength. And this is what I wanted my mom to watch this so that she can be, you know, feel inspired to build this kind of resilience, which I have to say, she's done a lot better since you watched this. So I thought it would be super interesting to share with you. But before I even get into the types of strength, one of the things that she talked about in this TED Talk that I knew you guys would be interested in that reminded me of something that we talked about a couple weeks ago when you were talking about what brings life meaning. She found a report from hospice workers, or like looked at research from hospice workers on what the top five regrets were for people who were on their deathbed.
Oh, man.
And she was looking at that of like, I'm going to look at what are the things that people regret? How can I take things that people regret and tie them into like games and turn it into an opportunity to kind of learn? And so do you think, like, if you were – imagine yourself older, what do you guess, or maybe like, oh, God forbid, that anything happened in this sort of situation right now where you would have to think about what one of your regrets would be? What do you think your top regret would be?
I have been talking about this all weekend because
– Really?
I am riddled with regret.
Susie!
I hate it.
Okay, well, maybe this can help.
Okay,
because she,
okay, yeah.
This can be helpful. Okay, what are your regrets centered around?
Everything, personal life and professional stuff.
Okay, more like
I can't think of anything I don't regret. Not really, but you know, it feels like I have more regrets than
is
what's
it like
the opposite
an
of a
I
regret?
Wish I Does it have to do with time spent with people or energy put into things?
Yeah, like I chose this path when I should have chosen a different path.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, let me tell you what the top five were that were on the list. And
yeah,
I think some of the ones that you have kind of cross over into a few of these. So the top five regrets were, I wish I hadn't worked so hard.
Mm. Really?
Yeah. I can totally see that. All those men who, like, I don't know why they're always men in my mind. Maybe women, too, who, like,
well, cause they
I'm married to the
home
job.
With their family.
Like, you know,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those people who are, like, watched their children grow up but weren't even there because they were working. Number two, stayed in touch with friends.
They wish they had?
Yeah.
Okay.
Susie, you're like, I wish the opposite. let myself be happier.
Wow. Okay.
That's a big one. Let myself be happier. Doesn't that sound like sad that people were holding themselves back? I think that kind of crosses
How
into
are
let
they
themselves
doing that?
Play.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense because they work too hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Then I wish I had the courage to express my true self.
Oh, I hate that one.
I know, because I think about anybody who's like LGBTQIA. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's a terrible feeling.
Yeah.
Where you had to stifle your essence.
And because we have to imagine this is like hospice care, you know, they're going to be older. This is probably like my grandma's generation. And then the last one was, I wish I had led a life true to my dreams, not what others wanted.
Mm. Oh, man, living for others. That's, ugh.
Right?
That's terrible.
Aren't those big ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and my book club pick for January is a book called On Living. And it's written by a chaplain who spends time with the dying. And so what you're talking about really overlaps with a lot of the things she's talking about in the book, because she's around people all day as a career who are talking about what they wish they had done differently. Mm. And then, you know, what she learned from all of that. And it's a lot of those same things. And this idea, she uses the word dancing. People talk about dancing a lot when they're dying.
Oh.
And how they wish they could have danced more and wish that they would be able to dance at that time, whether physically or emotionally, whatever.
This is that's powerful.
Yeah.
Do you ever get that urge to just dance and then you feel like, no, people will look at me like I'm funny?
Oh, I do it. I just let it out.
Sometimes when I'm like walking down the beach and listening to a good song, I'm like,
ugh, yeah, let it out.
Should.
Yeah.
How much older? How many more years until I give no fucks about that?
I'm thinking it's right around the corner.
I feel like it's right around the corner too.
Yeah.
I care a little bit right now. Yeah.
And she talked about how, in addition to feeling like people had taken their health for granted, which, you know, is a natural thing to feel once you're sick, is to feel like, wow, I didn't appreciate it when I was well. Mm-hmm. She also said that her sense is that they took their just being embodied for granted, just having a body, yeah. period.
Yeah.
When yes. you're about to die and not have a body anymore, you realize how special it is of an experience to feel things physically.
Oh, my gosh, in a physical way with this. Oh, that sounds trippy.
Like the touch of life, like what life feels like in a body. And you just don't think about it because that's all you know.
It's so important. That just speaks so much about the importance of staying present.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Cool.
Yeah, and like. Yeah, just appreciating those sensations and stuff.
Wow. I love that. It's just, it can tell you, it can help you kind of like refocus when you think about these kind of things.
I'll tell you what else helps me refocus.
Tell me.
And that is the wonderful service that Noom offers.
That is excellent for refocusing.
It is. Because Noom uses like a psychology approach to help people improve whatever their diets or whatever habits they feel are oppressing them. And then it gives you that knowledge, which empowers you to make informed choices about how you want to live, which I think is the best idea. And they can help you reach your goals. And a lot of people have had a lot of luck with Noom getting back on track health-wise and feeling the way they want to feel. And they just want to help you live a healthier, that's their singular mission, is to help as many people as possible live healthier lives through behavior change. They use the latest and proven behavioral science to empower people to take control of their health for good and through a combination of psychology, technology, and human coaching. So what is not to love about that? Here's the deal that they have. You can sign up for your trial and get psychology-based support and motivation to reach your goals at noom.com/braincandy. That's noom.com/braincandy. Sign up for your trial.
Yeah, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah. So what, you sound like you aren't somebody that has regrets.
I'm not really somebody who has regrets. I think.
How is that possible?
Man, because I think about, the only thing I've ever really felt like I could imagine myself regret, maybe I just don't know, maybe I don't have a lot of regrets because I do a lot of the things that I, you know, say that I want to do or that like.
Yeah.
For example, I think that if I didn't get divorced, I would regret that. But I did get divorced, so we're good.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And then I can't.
But so you don't regret being married in the first place?
No, because, I mean, mm-hmm. I can't even say that because I don't think I would be able to learn the lessons that I learned through that marriage without being in it. And I think mm-hmm. there were some things that. You know, I think we all have different needs at different times, so that relationship served different needs when I started it, when I was first in that relationship. But now I have different needs, and I think it was through my own growth within that relationship that I was able to further identify what my true needs are, and... Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But who knows? I mean, maybe. Sometimes I will say I do regret. But then I can always say it's a learning thing. I always go back to like, oh, I learned so much. Like, I do kind of regret. No, I don't. I was going to say I regret not seeing red flags sooner in past relationships and like, you know, jumping ship earlier. But I can't really say that because there were times where those relationships were really important to have. And I would have been sad if I didn't have them. So.
Wow. That's great. I'm happy for you.
No regrets over here, man. Some bad tattoos, those kind of
Not bad.
Right. That's better. Okay. That's yeah,
I could say I now say that I can honestly say I regret the revolver guns on my hips. We could definitely have.
You could do without those.
I could definitely do without those. So there are some regrets. But you know what? Maybe me not having regrets. No, you have these things too, though. Has something to do with like the what she calls these four types of strengths that the people help that people who are able to survive difficult traumas or survive tough times have. So one of the things that she looked at was people. So in the situation she was in with this traumatic brain injury, where she had to kind of stay still. She was thinking a lot about, like, there are some people we think of post-traumatic stress disorder. We kind of hear, like, the worst of the worst of what happens when, or, like, the bad stuff that happens when you go through a stressful event. But there's also something called post-traumatic growth, which is much less frequently discussed. And it says that people can go through a hardship, a difficult time, and they can come out stronger. They can come out happier. And they realize that, like, their priorities change. So the top five things – it's really interesting because the top five things that people who have this post-traumatic growth say are practically the opposite of the top five regrets in life. They are – my priorities have changed, which is basically like, I wish I hadn't worked so hard, the opposite of that. I'm not afraid to do what makes me happy. I feel closer to my friends and family. I understand myself better. I know who I really am now, and I have a sense of meaning and purpose in my life. Or I'm better able to focus on my goals and dreams. And it's like the exact opposite of that. So she looked at that, and like, what are those people who went through those difficult times and came out better have? And she came out with these four types of strength, and with these four types of strength built this game from it, which is like so freaking smart. And it's one of the coolest TED Talks. And if you are subscribed to the Brain Candy email, you will get
newsletter.
Thank you. You'll get the link to this TED Talk where you can watch it, because it's so good. And it's like 20 minutes. It's great. So four types of strength. One, physical resilience. So that's letting your body know that it can withstand stress. So moving your body like once every hour, and just keeping your body moving just lets it know. It's exactly like what you said about their bodies and feeling like, oh my gosh, cool.
That makes sense. That is cool.
That's awesome. So that, like, and that teaches, and you, the cool thing is that you don't have to do like really big, huge things. Like, yes, something like a triathlon teaches your body, like, oh my gosh, it can physically withstand so much. I mean, maybe that covers a lot of these types of strength, but just little things like, I'm going to stand up for a minute. Like, that's it. And your body goes, oh, cool, we did that. So I can do this other thing that's harder later. It's like teaching your brain in a little way. Then there's mental resilience. This is like willpower. And she gave the example, snap 50 times. And just 50 times with your fingers, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And just doing that, putting your body through and putting your mind through a little bit of a task and saying, like, you can keep going, and not quitting and making it through, just snapping 50 times. Strengthens your brain and builds resilience, and teaches your brain. And you just did that. You could do other things, because your brain like doesn't know the difference. It doesn't have a scale of like, well, this is hard, like this is easy. It just says, can I do this?
It's just like focus or not.
Yes. Then there's emotional resilience, which is being able to kind of make yourself feel better. So being able to pull up and like conjure up positive feelings, like being able to, you know, like, I don't want to say put on a happy face. That's not really right, because that kind of implies that we're like ignoring other emotions. But being able to say, like,
almost like put it in perspective.
Yes. Challenge those like irrational thoughts, like when the sad brain takes over and is like, you're the worst and life is awful. And you're like, nah, what about little baby puppies? And then your brain's like, oh, you're right, that is better. And that's emotional resilience.
Okay.
And all you have to do to build that up is look at cute little babies of animals and stuff.
What?
It really does work. in order to build up that is like, I believe it's kind of the example that she gave. You can look out the window and look at something beautiful, or look from the outside in, like imagine yourself looking out of a window. It's like, it kind of is like perspective and...
Yeah, realizing that you're not the only thing in the whole world.
Or you can just look up little baby animals. And it...
How is that? I can't believe that.
It's creating this feeling, and it shows us that we have the ability to provoke powerful, positive emotions like curiosity or love. And we feel those when we look at those baby animals. So by you not feeling it and then looking up baby animals and then feeling it, you're teaching your brain, hey, you didn't have that, and then you did this thing, and now you feel happy. So you could probably do that again. That's it.
That's really weird.
I know. Isn't it? It's like, I love it. It's that, all of this stuff, it's like we always say, it's that easy and it's that hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's so. Yeah.
It's simple but not easy.
That's a better way. It's simple but not easy. And the
What's the fourth type?
The last one is social resilience. So that's social. Connecting with others and being able to trust others, and things like gratitude and. Really importantly, touch.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. And like we need, and just shaking somebody's hand for 6 seconds releases oxytocin that builds that social resilience.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, you know, now especially when we've kind of been in the habit of being isolated, whether that's, you know, in so many different ways, figuratively or literally. Or, you know, and we got to really try, and we got to kind of remember if we are struggling, if we're having a difficulty, I don't know, surviving, then it could be because we're needing to build up some strength and some resilience in one of these categories. We kind of have to do things like, and it's so hard when you're like in that dark place to do things like connect to others or practice gratitude. But, oh man.
Well,
it really
one
is
thing that
simple.
Everybody should do, and it would help contribute to your well-being, is to talk to a therapist, as we often endorse on the show. And one way that you could do that, yes, one way to do that is through BetterHelp, which is a service that allows you access to professional therapists and accredited counselors that can, you know, talk to you about all the stuff that's on your mind and what vexes thee. It's customized online therapy, offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you can do it from wherever you are, and you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. And it's affordable, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. And they have a deal for you guys. You can give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp Online Therapy. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Brain Candy listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/BrainCandy. That's BetterHelp.com/BrainCandy.
So
she created a game.
Yeah.
That can, is this like accessible to the public?
Yeah, it's called Super Better, and you can still play it. Let me see. And I know that you can still, like, it's an app now. You can go to the app and you could sign up for it. So what you do is you pick your character, like you decide, you pick your superhero alter ego, and you know I love that because, hello, I've had a superhero alter ego for forever, Rogue Carbonara, ladies and gentlemen. Then you collect power-ups. So power-ups are doing anything through the day that like supports one of these four things. Doing anything a day that like boosts your, you kind of decide for yourself. So like your power-ups could be taking a 5-minute walk. Your power-ups could be writing down 3 things you're grateful for. and then you battle, what does she call them? Basically, like, the bad guys are anything that is going to, like, stand in the way of your healing or your success. So say you're somebody who struggled with addiction, alcohol would be, like, you know, avoiding triggers or avoiding alcohol would be, like, battling your bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they do not support this for alcoholism, but I'm just saying that, like, popped in my head. Because I watched the show Euphoria last night, and damn, is that a good show if anybody has not seen that. It's all about drugs and alcohol. So, yeah, so that is, that is, you can still play. And I was trying to encourage my mom to play and trying to get her to, like, download games. And, like, you know, I had to introduce her. I had her download Best Fiends on her phone because I was like, you got to play games. You got it. And she was like, people do this? I'm like, yes, mother. It's so fun. And now she's playing. And now she's loving it.
Do you think she seems down in the dumps or depressed at all?
I can see, it's not, like, down the dumps maybe would be the right way to call it, but not, I can see, I feel like I've been able to develop, I don't know, through my work and also just, like, growing up in a crazy family, the ability to kind of, like, recognize when somebody's thoughts change and when I can, like, see the emotions on their face and how they kind of take over. And, you know, if I'm in the session with somebody, I can say, you know, what thoughts just interrupted you right now? Or, like, what did your mind just tell you right now? And that made you, you know, change how, your expression or whatever. But I can see, like, when my mom's thoughts take over and it's like, this is the worst. You're never going to get out of this bed. Your body's hurting. You know, this is so painful. And it's like a wave, right? And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, so I think, and that's, it's letting that your, this, like, negative narrative that's not even true take over and just, like, run the show. And it's, and I, like, you know, got to hop in there and, like, change the soundtrack and be like, no, we're not listening to that. And so there are things that help to, you know, get out of that place. And mm-hmm. You can't just not have thoughts. You can't just go, oh, I don't want to think that. Oh, okay. No, you got to replace it with something. You got to, like, have something. And even I was just watching something on, my mom was watching this on, like, on Sunday. She does, like, she goes to, like, her online church and, like, her spiritual center and, like, does all of our, like, spiritual stuff. So it was really great. It's like her own little, like, power up that, you know, what she was doing. And there was a guy who was talking about meditating, and he was saying that, oh, now I just totally lost my train of thought because I was thinking about this old guy and his meditating. Oh, yes, that you can't just replace it, that one of the easiest ways to, or you can't just, like, get rid of a thought, you have to replace it. And one of the easiest ways to do it, and why people use this, are, like, those, like a mantra, or like how we go, om. Mm-hmm. Like, because when you do that, when you just say, like, the same thing over and over and over, whatever it is, it could be, my grandma used to say the letter two, like number two, when she would fall asleep. She goes, just pick a simple thing to say and say it over and over. And she just fall asleep, like, two, 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 two. And she just said it over and over, and that was how she went to bed. But it's the same kind of thing. It's a mantra to distract your brain to get rid of the other thoughts that are doing, that are taking your brain in a direction you don't want it to go.
Yeah.
And that's it. You just distract. It's kind of like, I think about little, you know, like babies, and you have the keys and you're like, hey, don't cry. Look at the keys. Jingle, jingle. You know, and you, like, shake the keys. Yeah. Like, that's kind of what I feel like we have to do with our brains. We're like, whoa, 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 brain. Look over. Look over here. Or else it starts throwing a fucking temper tantrum.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We are just like infants.
For sure. I see it. We absolutely. And, like, and then when we get in these places where we feel, I don't know, where that resilience is low, or, like, we feel like down in the dumps, so to speak, I feel like everybody reverts back to the first time they felt like that, and that's usually when they were a little kid. So you get reactions that are very childish.
Oh, man. Why do you think it is that, evolutionarily speaking, I think, you know how exercise is one of those things that most people don't really want to do, but then they do it, they They love it.
Yeah.
And I find that meditation fits in that same category. You don't really want to do it most days. But then when you do, you're glad you did. Why do you think our brains don't want to do meditation?
I think that this is every single thing that is the good things for us. And I think it has to do with living in a society where everything is like, we don't have to wait. There's no delay of gratification. It's instant gratification. We live in an instant gratification society where everything is right there. And even like, you know, your brain, when it's super, super hungry, wants a hamburger, not a salad, even though deep down, mm-hmm. you know, a salad is what you really need, not hamburger. And right. I think it's more that pattern over and over and over of instant gratification that your brain is going, wait, why would you put effort into? We don't need to do that. That's not, mm-hmm. there's no point. This is faster. And you, mm-hmm. until you really build up that, like,
the muscle of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a short term, it's a quick fix, but not a long, it's like a quick fix, but then a fast crash, mm-hmm. versus the stuff that's good for us, like meditation and, you know, whatever else, that's slow, but has much longer effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing. I feel so similar to when I had that conversation with my mom about why I'm not going to do psychedelic drugs, like, you know, and how you can walk up the mountain or you could take the tram up the mountain, and how,
right.
you know, you miss some stuff with mm-hmm. the fast way or the easy way. I don't know what there. I think it's all of those things, that physical resilience, mental resilience, emotional and social. It's like all of those, you know, we deep down need that. And the quick fix is never going to give us those things.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Well, I'm excited because we have a guest for this episode. Ooh. And I think that it's so apropos because he is the author of that book that I love, The Comfort Crisis. His name is Michael Easter.
Oh, well, if this isn't perfect.
Yeah, because, well, the subtitle of the book is Embrace Discomfort to Reclaim Your Wild, Happy, Healthy Self.
We didn't plan this.
No.
This was not planned.
No, and guys, so many of the things we're talking about are covered in the book.
This is amazing.
Yeah, like even what you just said about how we're instant gratification people, and that the immediacy of comfort and how easy it is to be comfortable, it feels nice in that moment maybe,
yeah.
but we're sacrificing a lot as a result. And so his thesis is, you know, basically that you kind of need to force your life to be a little more uncomfortable so that mm-hmm. you gain those long-term health and mental health benefits.
Yes. Yes.
And that book was revelatory for me because all of his arguments are true, like how we go from a climate-controlled house to our climate-controlled car and sit on a seat and then move to the bed and then another seat all day long. We just move from seat to seat to seat.
Mm.
And how it's so nice that our lives are comfortable, but that our brains are suffering.
Yep. And we need a little bit of resilience built up.
Yeah. And that it is so much more fulfilling if you participate. Because you know that saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger?
If this is just an argument for why the cockroaches coming out of the drain wasn't as terrifying as I made it out to be. It was really a good thing. Okay.
Well, I would think that you being outside of your comfort zone is a good thing. I don't know about the cockroaches in particular. But just being in a new environment, all of that is so good for your brain.
Yes.
Even, you know how they say drive home a different way? Like, it's the Jane McGonigal thing where it's just like, just do it a little different.
Just a little.
And your brain is getting exercise out of it, essentially.
Yes, it is. I love it.
Yeah, Michael's book, you have to read it, you guys. It is so good. And the book, the backdrop of the book is a trip he took to the Arctic for a month with his buddies. And then each chapter talks about a different way that you should challenge yourself in the context of his trip. It is excellent. Cool. And I really enjoyed interviewing him. And one of the things I asked him was why he tends to only appear on podcasts that are like more of a male audience. Mm. And I asked him why, but he didn't know either. But I don't love this thing where I notice a schism between women's self-help and, quote, men's self-help.
Yeah.
And I don't know. You guys know I don't love self-help because it does tend to repeat like tropes of, just like love yourself and what,
like, terrible message.
Like better days ahead and vision boards. And I know vision boards are nice and everything like that, but I need a little bit more. I need a bit more of like, do hard shit.
Yeah. You want action.
He talks about it as like be a 2%er because only 2% of people will take the stairs instead of the escalator, like at the airport or something.
What? Oh, yes.
So be a 2%er.
I'm that.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not that bad. It's not that big of a deal.
No problem.
But over a lifetime, those things add up.
Yes. That really does. That is super cool. Well, you know what I was also thinking about? Even just like the positions that we sit in, like when I go to Thailand and their toilets were always just that hole in the ground. It was like, that's how it was. And you'd squat. And then we were talking about how something about like your hips and like less breaking of your hips if you go from the position of being on the ground to standing up. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
All those little tiny things.
Yeah, it's small little choices.
Things. I love it. This is so cool. Changing lives over here.
We're making days. Do you have anything else you want to share, or should I just introduce him?
Do I have anything else? I will save our other stories for another day. I'm so excited to hear.
It's a deal.
From our friend.
Yes. Welcome to the show, author of The Comfort Crisis, Michael Easter.
Thank you for coming on Brain Candy Podcast, Michael Easter.
Of course.
I am so lucky that I get to talk to you. Because you're so special. I can't believe this book you wrote. How do you feel? Do you feel like you can rest on your laurels now?
I don't know. I know that, it's awesome that you like it. I really appreciate that and the kind words and things you've put on social media. That's been cool to see. I know other people have liked it for sure, which has been, it's been awesome.
Yeah, because I feel like you have a bunch of super fans now. Do you feel that?
I don't know if I would use the term super fans. I definitely have people who are like, oh, you wrote this book that I like. Now, like, let's be friends, which I'm totally fine with. Yes.
Yes. I would like to be a member of that group. And I did warn you that this really isn't an interview. I just want to shower you with praise because you've done something really special. And I noticed on Amazon that your book was in the genre of self-help. Would you characterize it that way?
I don't know. At one point, Amazon put it in the genre of dementia. And so it's like,
no.
Amazon algorithms, I think, are drunk half the time. But I would say that it has elements of information that can help people improve their lives, think differently about their lives, but it also has elements of like, here's an adventure narrative, and has elements of history. It's got a lot of stuff. So I think it's kind of hard to pin down. I will say, like, you know, part of selling a book is that you have to have an agent, which is that's me basically saying that, I hate to use that term because it makes me seem fancy or something, but that's just the way the book industry works. And my agents are like, I don't know what the hell this book is. Like, where are they going to categorize it? Who, like, we have no idea. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Cause I guess it is self-help, but it kind of, it's so different than the stereotype of self-help because it's not about like thinking positive or whatever. It's actually about behaviors and things that you can do that maybe will provide meaning or well-being for people.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah. But, well, did you feel that sense of like, I'm just telling the truth here, which I don't feel like a lot of self-help books do, you know?
Well, I think that my litmus test was like, would I actually do this? And I'm like, I'm a skeptical person by nature, you know, like my background is that I'm a science journalist. And so, you know, I read a lot of studies and talk to a lot of different sources and, I'm pretty skeptical. So it's like, but I also like to experiment. I'm also open to the idea that science doesn't have every single answer, you know? So I guess it's just kind of a result of that thinking. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I agree. And that's sort of the fun of it though, is that there's still some mystery about human behavior, the way the world works and what gets our motors running. But yeah. I feel like you did such a good job of tapping into practical things that people can do to make the best of this shitty situation on earth. I don't know. Do you feel like most of your readers are dudes?
No, not at all.
Tell me what the breakdown is in your mind or factually.
I would probably say half and half. Probably. Well, yeah. And it's,
do you feel like you get asked to go on mostly dude podcasts though?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a good, I never thought of that. Cause I get just as
by it.
I definitely feel like the readership has been, pretty split down the middle, but yeah, I do mostly get asked to come on more dude-ish podcasts. Also some like kind of nerdy academic podcasts too, which I kind of, I don't know. I've never thought of that. You make a good point.
I know. I'll be the ambassador for the ladies because I do feel like that's what I liked about it was that it was challenging what you were prescribing for people, but that it was helpful. But I was concerned that like women would be crabby about your chapter about food and body stuff. What's the feedback been?
People have, I want to hear your perspective on that. Cause I was trying to be careful on that. I will say the source that I work with, his clients are probably mostly female.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely hard because I tend to think about it. Like when we look at it from purely just like a health perspective, I think that there's good enough evidence that says, you know, like being within a certain weight, you're going to be less at risk of certain diseases. That's not to say you can't be healthy at a weight that isn't what doctors would consider optimal. And honestly, a lot of these figures are just made up, right? Like BMI is just something we made up to try and figure out, oh, like people are having problems at whatever certain amount of weight.
Yeah.
So I definitely don't want to pigeonhole people into thinking that, you know, losing weight is the answer because it's not. Because sometimes like gaining weight can actually make people healthier in some situations, you know. I think that there's a difference between the masses in terms of the 330 million people who live in America versus the masses that are writing for major media outlets and are on Twitter talking about nutrition. Like those are totally different people. And so I think that the masses would define disordered eating as like on one extreme as like anorexia, nervosa, bulimia that they see in, you know, famous cases. But also like, I don't think the average person thinks that like overeating all the time is that's disorder too, you know? Whereas I think sometimes in the media, you see a lot of like, we're almost too careful of being like, yeah, you can't, like, don't worry about losing weight. Like I even write for a couple magazines who are like, oh no, we don't talk about like weight loss anymore. It's like, yo, 70% of people are overweight in the US, 40% obese. And we know that being at a certain, like at a quote unquote healthy weight is like the number one thing you can do to avoid disease. Like, why can't we talk about this?
Do you think it just comes down to generating revenue and what's appealing to readers?
I think that it comes down to not wanting to get called out on social media. I think that people
were you worried about that?
Not really. I'm talking about from perspective of like, why wouldn't a major media outlet want to write about weight loss? I think they're too worried about, I think that social media can become a bit of an echo chamber. And I don't know. We're not a healthy country, and I think most of it is food related.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you think too, when you compile all of the things that you describe in the book on ways in which to improve your life, that if you were to do all of those things, that that part might fall into place on its own? Because if you're feeling happier and more fulfilled and have greater meaning,
yeah,
maybe we wouldn't seek it in things like that aren't as healthy.
Yeah, I think so. I think that stress eating is the one thing that doesn't get talked about enough when we talk about food. I think food is like a really easy escape, effortless escape from food. And we often use it for reasons other than energy. And that's not me saying that like we shouldn't use it as a celebration occasionally, because that's done. It's been done throughout history, right?
Yeah.
But it was used as a massive celebration like two or three times a year. And now it's like, you look at how we eat now, and like we eat like king, like literally kings now, you know, and it's every single day.
Yeah.
And this definitely has consequences. And I think that it's just an easy way to escape sort of the discomfort that can come along with living modern life. But if that's how you're dealing with it, like you're not getting to whatever is under the surface. It's like, why are you eating? Let's quit worrying so much about what you're eating. Let's talk about why you're eating. Right.
When you were you came up with the premise and then you did all the shenanigans that it takes to create the book.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you were in that process of researching and writing, was there something that you learned that was especially exciting or interesting, or a confirmation of something you believed but didn't know for sure?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, one thing that I think that was interesting for me is, so part of the book, for people who are listening that I haven't read it, is that I spent a month in the Arctic, and I was there hunting on a backcountry hunt. And, you know, going into this, I had been invited up there with a guy who does these documentary films, and he's also a hunter. And I didn't want to hunt because I'm like, I didn't want to hunt because it's hunting. And I eat meat, you know, 95% of people do, but I didn't really want to cross, you know, what I presume would be a pretty heavy emotional barrier. And the guy that I went up with, he was basically like, look, I think that you will understand why we do what we do, and also what you're writing about more if you hunt. And I trusted them on that. But even at that, like, I go as far as I buy a tag to hunt, which is expensive. I'm carrying like a rifle the entire time, and I'm still like, I don't know if I'm going to do this, you know? And eventually, after a couple of weeks, like, I got in a situation where there was an animal that was very old and that was limping and injured, and it just, I pulled the trigger, more or less, to put it bluntly. And my initial reaction was that, like, you're not coming back from this. you've crossed this barrier that's like you're not coming back from this, dude. Oh. And I was just really broken up, you know?
You were?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, that's lovely.
But then, you know, we start breaking the animal down because we're going to eat it all. And once we started breaking it down, I could see that it was meat. And then it occurred to me, like, you eat meat every single day, dude. And like, never once have you felt an iota of emotion. What? So like, why now? I just kind of felt like a damn hypocrite. Like, and it also kind of made me think about, like, for one thing to live on, another has to die. That's how the life cycle works. And then the next inevitable jump is, oh, you're not excluded from that. Right. And so that led me to sort of like looking into how, like, our modern relationship with death and how we view death. And I'd like traveled to Bhutan and I met with like leaders in the Buddhist faith and like economists who study this. And so that was really, I think that was kind of the most intense thing for me, which of course there was all these like physical elements of like having to carry hundreds of pounds across the Arctic and like brave the weather and all these other things. But that like deep sort of emotional and like realization of impermanence, more or less, I mean, that's pretty heavy once you like it, that, but it also changed me in a really positive way, I think. 'Cause all of a sudden it's like, oh, once you realize this ride is going to end, you start looking at the ride a lot differently.
Yeah. And we've sort of situated ourselves in a way that creates such distance between us and that inevitable end. Do you think that is just because it's uncomfortable, that is why we've done it? Or is it just, you know, life's busy and we're booked solid over here?
I think that it's a mix of it always. I mean, there's always, we're programmed to live, right? We have all these different drives that are all just there so we can live on and spread our DNA. So we are like all animals, we don't want to die. It's an uncomfortable thought. And, but I think things change culturally with how we view death and our exposure to it. So, you know, in the book I write about in the past, even a couple hundred years ago, death was pretty like homegrown. When someone would die, like you would take care of that person as they died and you would, you know, bury them. And it was very intimate. And there was like this reminder that like, I'm going to die one day.
Yeah.
And even our food system, it was a lot more intimate with like the animals.
Yes. Right.
So there's that reminder. And then I think it was Abraham Lincoln. He was the first person to get embalmed and it became this popular thing after that. So, and then the modern hospital system rose. So all of a sudden death went from being this thing that happened at home to like, someone dies in the hospital, they're immediately taken to the embalmer to make them look as alive as possible for like this last kind of viewing. And then we put them in the ground. And then what are we told? Don't think about it. Take your mind off it. Mm-hmm. Right. So we kind of got removed from it. And I do think it's one of the more uncomfortable things to contemplate, but I think, you know, it's sort of a metaphor for a lot of what I'm talking about in the book, whereas like by going through discomfort in all different kinds of forms, you usually end up better on the other side. You know, think of something like exercise. Whoever wants to start like exercise, but afterwards you're like, oh, I'm so glad I did that. I feel better. Right. Same with like, if you, weight loss, we were just talking about, right.
Like meditation, I feel like that. I never want to do that shit.
Yes, you know? I'm with you. Minute one, I'm like, why? And then eventually, and then you get like these kind of moments where you're like, oh man, I'm really glad I did that, you know?
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Why do you think boredom is so beneficial?
Oh, because it's so when you look at the reason why we evolved to be bored, boredom was this evolutionary discomfort that basically told us whatever you're doing with your time right now, it's a bad, you're not getting a good return on your time. So you think in the past, let's say we were hunting and there weren't any animals. Well, if we didn't get food that night, we're going to starve to death. So boredom would kick in and it would basically tell us, go do something else. Mm. Something might have been, you know, I'm going to go pick berries or potatoes or whatever. So boredom was this thing that, you know, told us to go do something. And now we have very easy escapes from boredom. So now when people are bored, what do?
Sure, go on their phone, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It's like if you're ever at a grocery store, there's not a single person in line who's not on their cell phone. So now instead of, I think, letting our mind take us to somewhere that arguably could be more beneficial, we go into the whole of Instagram or, you know, Twitter or some game or whatever. And I'm not saying that like everything that happens inside a phone is bad, but when you look at the numbers, people spend more than 12 hours a day engaging with digital media. Now that's all new in 100 years, right? Mm-hmm. So think of that. People for 2.5 million years had no, like their attention was never focused in on like a screen and this digital media. And now within 100 years, that's like how we spend our entire day. And I think there are consequences to that. So, you know, they've done some research where they'll take one group and they'll just kind of let them hang out on their cell phone. And they'll take another group and they'll bore the hell out of them. And the bored group always scores better on creativity tasks, because what happens when you're bored? Your mind starts to think up, go to weird places and think of weird things. And it just gives your mind a break. Like when we're focused outwardly all the time, your brain's working pretty hard. Like we don't give our brain time to kind of go inward and just like rest and reset. So I argue in the book, we need, there's so much like focus on spend less time on your phone, right? But when people do that, they often then go, oh, I'm bored. What the hell do I do? All right, I'll just watch Netflix. Well, your brain doesn't really know the difference, right? So it's like you should find ways to insert boredom back in your life is one of the messages I have.
I know this sounds crazy because you went on this true adventure and it was so special in the Arctic. But when you're on a reality show, they take away your phones, they take away your books, they take away anything that would be distracting. And I found on all the shows that I've done that inevitably I realized something about my life at home that needs to change. And that I have a shift that I need to make because I don't normally think about it because I don't have that kind of focus. And so I was wondering if whenever you are gone all that time and removed from people and stuff, that you, did you have any of those realizations or was it just a general sense of like a shift overall because of that experience?
Oh yeah. Like I experienced it as like a lot of stripping away of what doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And it's almost like peeling an onion and you're just like, what's at the center? And what was at the center is that I realized what really mattered to me. And that was like my wife, my dogs, my mom, time with them. And that's
good stuff.
That was it, you know? because we spend so much, think of your mind every day. It's like all over, like looking for all these random problems.
Yeah.
The reality is that problems are all perspective. You know?
That was the most powerful thing, I think, in the book, was that study that they did where it was like, if you don't have problems, your brain's like determined to find some.
Yeah.
And I had always thought that to be true, but I can't believe it really is that we're kind of hardwired to find that equilibrium and to sort of maintain. So if everything's great, you got to find something shitty.
Yeah.
Bonkers or what?
It's totally bonkers. Well, it's not bonkers. It's bonkers today. Yeah. It wasn't bonkers in the past. So in the past, it would have helped, given us a survival advantage, because like, if you can, when the world is dangerous and harsh and like, there's not enough of anything, if you can constantly be seeking out problems, like we don't have enough food, weather's coming in, all these things, that's going to give you a survival advantage. But today we don't have those same type of problems. So we're like, right, we're looking for stuff.
Yeah. Oh. Like my body's like, here's some restless leg syndrome or whatever, you know?
Exactly. Or it's like, you know, an email comes in and you're like, wait, maybe you're going to interpret that as like a slight, but it's like, you don't really know. It's just like, you choose to interpret something as a problem. So,
yes, dude, that is so interesting. I was reading, from one of our listeners who's reading it for our book club, that she was wondering if maybe the book was sort of geared primarily towards people of privilege, people that really don't have a lot of true worries in terms of survival or making ends meet. Do you think that's accurate or not?
People have brought that up. I think that what happens is that you're assuming that people that we currently define as being underprivileged wouldn't be privileged in the grand scheme of time and space.
Right.
So I have had people reach out to me from all over the world, a lot in, I mean, people of all different backgrounds and countries all around the world, who, if you looked at these places from a pure GDP standpoint, I mean, these are not places that are well off. And so I worried about that before I put the book out, for sure. But I have found that these problems seem to be growing across the world in places that, you know, maybe if you're in the US and you're well off, you wouldn't expect, but people everywhere still have the problems stemming from comfort. I mean, for example, like our food system, and I think that the message that that good things come from doing things maybe you don't want to do that are hard, I think that's pretty universal. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I saw on Instagram you talking about your next project. I'm so excited. Good. How do you feel about it? Are you inspired and passionate, or are you in the drudgery?
I was in the drudgery a couple of weeks ago, but I'm feeling good. And I think honestly, like, the drudgery is a metaphor for the book I just wrote, right? Yeah, it's like, right, things got to suck. You got to, you know, I have a friend who, really unbelievable athlete. He's the first guy to win a gold in a Nordic event in ever for the US. And he has this saying that breakthroughs happen on the verge of breakdowns. Yeah. It's just like, that's totally true. When I'm like, all right, got to call my editor and tell him I'm done. And then all of a sudden it's like the fog clears and you're like, wait a minute, it's all coming together now, you know?
Yes. So. Well, I'm so grateful for people like you who have such a knack for just knowing what, I don't know how to put it all together. It was so beautifully written and it was inspiring, but it was doable. It didn't feel like pie in the sky. It felt like this is very applicable and anybody can do it.
Good. Because so I definitely didn't want the message to be that people have to go to Alaska for 30 days. I think that's
I'm not doing that, Michael. Yeah. I'm just going to let you do it. And I will learn from you.
Cool.
And I mean, that's such a lucky thing that you are able to help regular folks like me improve their lives. And I don't know, it's a blessing. Okay. I want to know, we ask everybody what they keep in the trunk of their car. Do you have a car?
I do. Yeah.
What's in there?
I have this, backpack that like has a winter coat and other like rants. So I tend to go do things that are sometimes a little out there. Like,
but you live in dangerous. Vegas.
Yeah, but I found myself in some weird places. You just got to be ready, you know, just that kind of stuff. It's like, here's like the oh shit bag, more or less.
Yeah. What else so is in like, there besides the coat?
Oh, like lighters, fire. I mean, it's like just kind of like little survival stuff. I mean, I don't want this to sound like I'm a weird prepper, because I'm not. It's just very basic, like, you might want to be safe, dude. You go do some weird stuff in weird places. So
you're a troubleshooter. That's fine. Yes. One other thing I really love about you is I noticed that when you talk about getting that caribou, that you say we caught a caribou. I think that's very generous and lovely. And you probably think that's just obvious that it was a we, not an I. But do you think that that sense of collectivism or communal spirit is lacking now? Or do you think that's false?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that, so there's a couple of things. I think loneliness is definitely up. And in the book, I also talk about how we don't want to be alone anymore, but we also can't be alone. Like, people have a hard time with it, you know, because we don't know ourselves a lot of the time. So in the book, I kind of advocate for solitude. Solitude is different than loneliness. Solitude is like choosing to be by yourself. So you come to the center of some ideas. Like, people often need time alone to really think and like figure things out, mm-hmm. like time for removal, right? It's like, even today when we're alone, we're usually with people in the form of like media or text messages or with our phone or whatever. And I think that just time totally removed can be beneficial, because if you can't fall back on yourself because you don't really know yourself and you just can't be alone, like, what happens if everything fades away? Like, you're going to be in a bad spot, you know? I think there's this like kind of growing thing where, and maybe it's not growing, maybe it's always been around, where we just kind of do things because everyone else does them. Right. It's like, think of the American dream. It's like, well, who the hell decided that? Right.
Yeah.
And yet we all do it. It's like, I'm going to graduate high school. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a car or whatever. Yeah. There's this like Zen koan where there's a, this monk wants to achieve enlightenment. And he's told that like, if you go from, if you go on a pilgrimage from monastery to monastery, like, that can happen. You go on pilgrimage. That's what you do when you're a monk. Right. So he's going from like monastery to monastery and he's leaving one. And the like Zen master goes, "What are you doing?" He goes, "Oh, I'm going on pilgrimage. I'm leaving. I'm going on pilgrimage." And he's like, "What's pilgrimage?" And the kid's like, "I don't know." Like, he has this moment where he's like, "Why am I doing this?"
Right.
Right. Yeah. And of course it's kind of obscure, like all koans are, where you have to like, you know, how am I? Yeah. but I think there's something to that, because he replies with not knowing is most intimate. It's like, oh, it's like this lack of like having this set idea of what you have to do is like, whoa. And then all of a sudden things are open. Right.
Right.
So I don't know. That's kind of a aside, but
no, I love it. And I feel like, the phrase self-care is used a lot as sort of like, get a facial, get a manicure, take a bath. But I think that your book describes what self-care should be, which is like real hard, challenging, not pleasant all the time, but then you're better after.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's also, I think it's sometimes doing things that you're afraid of and that you don't want to do. I think because of, as you mentioned before, I get invited on a lot of bro podcasts, and it's like, it often gets interpreted as like, go out and do some hard workout.
Yeah.
And it's like, look, I know people that can run 100 miles just like nonstop, but they couldn't sit alone in their thoughts for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So that tells me there's something up. What are you running from? Yeah. Right.
Different types of challenge.
Yeah.
Well, so. You're doing the Lord's work. I'm really thankful that you wrote your book, and I'm really thankful you're going to write more. But mostly, I'm just glad I got to tell you how great you are. So thanks for coming on the show.